friends, welcome back to the Making It in the Messy Middle podcast. My name is Kate, and I'm so grateful that you're here with us today. I just can't wait to see how we're going to grow together. Hey, so we're back. Again, we're here with our mini-series on domestic violence. We've had some really great opportunities to look into things that go into abusive relationships, things that go beyond the physical, which is what people who aren't very familiar, people who maybe haven't had the experience, may not know exists. People may simply see the bruises and not know what goes on behind that, or they may see no bruises and not realize that abuse is occurring. So we've gone over shame, and we've talked about steps to move through that shame. Last week, we were able to go on a journey through emotional abuse and what that can entail, and then how we can recognize it and what we can do about it. And through both of those episodes, we've been able to look at elements such as isolation, verbal violence, intimidation, minimizing or denying, and even a little bit into coercion. So these things are all some of the different parts of the power games that an abuser will play in order to keep someone in their control. Now, just like the past couple of weeks, I want to talk to you today about another tool in an abuser's tool belt. This week, we're going to focus on economic abuse, financial abuse. This is another type of abuse that is really good at keeping someone in an abuser's clutches. Now, abusers will do anything they can to control their victims, and controlling money is a really good way to do that. They'll do this in a lot of different ways. Some abusers will keep their partner from working, saying that they prefer for them to stay home, stay in the house, stay around where they can know where they are. They may convince them to do this by accusing them of cheating with people at work, or saying that they don't want to miss out on any time with them. Maybe while their partner is at work, the abuser is constantly texting, constantly calling, interrupting them, keeping them from being able to properly focus on their work, sometimes even going so far as to get them fired, sometimes going so far as to show up at their workplace and cause different kinds of problems. Other abusers will force their partner to work while the abuser does nothing. They'll say that they're not able to work. They'll say they're too upset to work, too depressed to work, things like that. And they'll use their partner's work against them. They may still say, well, you're cheating with that guy that you work with, and I know you are. And, well, your work is just keeping you away from me too much. But what they'll do is they'll still force that partner to work, and they'll still take control of the finances. A lot of times they'll make money disappear, and their partner doesn't even know where it goes. And then when their partner asks the abuser, you know, hey, we had $600 in the bank account. Now we're down to $200. I don't know what happened. The abuser will become irate and often very dangerous when that financial infidelity is brought up. Now, some abusers, many in fact, will not even allow their partner any access to the bank account or the debit card. Instead, they'll leave them an allowance, or they will force them to ask for money. And sometimes if they do leave an allowance, they'll take away parts of that allowance when they get upset or when they feel they need something. Sometimes they will leave their partner grocery money. And say they leave $70 for grocery money. Well, the partner goes to go grocery shopping and finds that they only have $20 now. And they don't know what to do, and they don't know where that money went. And then, like we said, that gets brought up to the abuser, and the abuser becomes irate and dangerous. Abusers will often keep the lease on the house in their name, the title on the car in their name. They keep the bank account in their name, everything in their name, so that when the partner wants to separate, they're often left with nothing at all. Some abusers will go so far as to accuse their partner of stealing the car if their partner leaves the house without permission because the car is not in their partner's name. So it can be pretty obvious that this is a very powerful tool to keep someone in an abuser's hold. Someone who has no control over any of their money, someone who feels like there is no way for them to live independently because they've been forced to be so dependent for so long, is not going to be someone who feels like it's very easy to walk away, and understandably so. Now, if you add children into the equation, it becomes even more complicated because a partner may feel that they have no way to properly care for their children without that abuser's support, whether it be financially, and sometimes even, you know, support that that abuser does give as a parent. Now, for me, until I was in the middle of it, it was really easy for me to say, just leave. Okay, money, you can figure money out later. Just, it's dangerous, you need to go. But I want you to remember all of the pieces that we have talked about up until this point. The shame, the isolation, the emotional turmoil. There's just no way for you to see true reality in some of these situations. Something I realized after getting out, and after being out for a long time, I mean, it hasn't been a long time, but after being out for a while, is it feels like I lived in a completely different world back then. It feels like I, you know, when I lived in that world, I was entrenched in this sort of muddy hole. And there will be small things now, things like smells or a song or a sound or even just a word, and they transport me completely back to that world. And it's not the same as a flashback that some people may think of where I'm visualizing exactly what happened to me. It's more of I feel burdened by that reality. I feel like I am back in that reality, and my brain feels as muddy as it did while I was in that reality. And I can't fully explain to you how you feel like a completely different person when you're back in that world. And that it's just a hold, and I hate being in it. There are some of my favorite songs, but they were songs that I listened to back then, and I hear them now, and I feel like I'm right back there. And so, you know, I have to take that off my playlist or skip it. And for someone, you know, who has experienced abuse, when you're in this reality, it is a reality that abuser has created for you. And I'm not saying this to sound in any way sacrilegious, but in a sense, they become the god of your world because they control everything. They control the environment. They control the perceptions that you have. They control your reality. They create your reality. And it comes to a point where you don't know anything else. Now, obviously, God is not like that, but they become, in your brain, the creator of your reality. So for someone currently experiencing abuse, this financial layer just adds to their turmoil. If they've been isolated, who's going to help them financially? If they've been told that no one cares and they aren't capable of handling themselves, how are they going to be able to go out and get a job and feel like they're competent at it? Maybe they've been the breadwinner while their abuser stays home and watches the kids. And if they leave, then how will the children be cared for? There are so many ifs, so many questions, so much going on in the mind of someone who's struggling to pull through that it can feel absolutely impossible to dig out of this mud puddle you're stuck in. So, just like with the past two episodes, so what? What can you do about it? What can you do to move through this? I'm going to give you the exact same first step that I have given you before. Talk to somebody. Don't let fear or pride stop you, okay? Tell them about the financial struggles that you're experiencing and see if they have options for you. This doesn't mean you're necessarily asking for money. You're asking for resources. You know, having an outside ear, maybe this person, they know of a food bank that could help you until you get back up on your feet. Maybe they know of a shelter or domestic violence center in your area that could help with finding housing or other resources, or even shelter for you now if that's something that you need. Call the hotline. Talk to a professional. Again, same things as last time. Talk to someone. Then, if it is safe for you, you can start keeping money away. Okay, if he gives you an allowance, you can open a bank account in your name without his knowledge. You don't have to get a debit card, not yet, and you can hide the money there. You can put a friend's address as the mailing address so that no mail will come to your home and give them a clue that you've got that bank account. Maybe you can hide that money somewhere safe if you're not able to get to a bank, if you feel it's not a safe option for you to open a bank account of your own. Maybe you can hide it somewhere in the house where it won't be found. If you're the one who makes the money, you can do the same thing. Just a little bit of money at a time can help you to create a nest egg for when it's time to leave. But again, always be safe about these things. You know your partner better than anybody else knows your partner. You know how much you can put away without it being noticed. So do what you have to do. And there are even options about, you know, if they're the name on the lease or they're the name on the car, you know, there's no promises as to what a judge will do. There never are promises as to what a judge will do. But if you file for a protection from abuse order, a PFA, sometimes a judge will be able to make them leave the home. Or they may make them leave you alone about the car. If they try and report the car stolen, your protection order, your PFA, may say, no, this person is allowed to be driving this car. Talk to a domestic violence hotline to see if there are any victim advocates in your area that may be able to assist you with that process. Okay, I'm going to give you the National Domestic Violence Hotline number again. All right, it's 1-800-799-7233. Call that line. What they'll do is they will route your call to the nearest domestic violence hotline in your area, the domestic violence center or shelter in your area, and they will be able to help you with resources that will benefit you in the best ways that you need to be benefited. And it's important that you know this, okay? You can do this without them. I want you to have the knowledge, okay? You are a fully capable, strong, amazing human being, regardless of what they say to you, what they have said to you. I've said it every episode. You have people in your corner, and those people want to help you. But you've got to reach out to them. Otherwise, they don't know what you need. They don't know how to help you. And I know that is so scary, but I also know that it could be the best and the bravest thing you will ever do. Again, you know your partner better than you know anyone. You know yourself better than anyone else knows you. You know yourself better than anyone else. You know when it is time to take action. Trust yourself. Your gut is usually right. There are a lot of reasons not to do something. But as one of my favorite authors, Emily P. Freeman, says, don't let fear be one of those reasons. Keep on, friends.